From RTE Radio, I'm Niall O'Sheridan. This is Playback Daily.
I have to admit, we didn't go dancing because we felt very... it was just a bit awkward, you know.
But we're starting to see big numbers. We had a huge haul off west of Kerry last summer of anchovies, and I'm hearing about fishermen catching sardines.
Star Wars is a very Kerry story, you know.
Comedy.
The story of a young farm boy who doesn't get on with his outlad, kissed his sister a couple of times. And the Chewbacca accent, of course, is based on the Kerry accent.
Coming up on this special TGIF edition of Playback Daily. Going clubbing when you're not all that young. Revealed how Ireland is being invaded by millions of tiny fish. And comedian Kevin McGarren on how Kerry inspired Star Wars. That's all on the way over the next hour of the Radio Catch-Up Show that has a very bad feeling about this. Okay, let's start then with Oliver Callan musing on getting the ugly stuff out of the way.
Harvey Weinstein is all over the press this morning, as you can imagine. His 2020 rape conviction overturned. It's a stunning, incredible moment, I think, we're going to have. New York's highest court ruled that some of his accusers should not have been allowed to testify. Now, he remains in jail because of separate criminal charges he was convicted of. But the ruling by the New York Court of Appeals marked a stunning reversal of the case that formed the cornerstone of the Me Too movement. It's kind of an omen, isn't it, that the... We're seeing them around the place, that movement driven by progressives and liberal values of the middle of the last decade in particular. You're going around 2015, 2017 was Me Too. That kind of driving force for social reform and the progressive values, it might be collapsing around us. Will we look back, I wonder, on the Barbie phenomenon last summer as the peak of this social justice, woke, feminist cause victories? I wonder. Woke is dead. That's what the right wing ideologists are gleefully calling it. But whatever your view, there's no doubt that kind of prevailing wind of the liberal progressive values which changed the conversation in political parties and in corporate marketing in particular through the 2010s, that wind direction has changed and we are going into the breeze led by right wing concerns. So you have shades of racism now entering the conventional media conversations. We spoke about that here the other day. And you can see the political parties all over the world and in Ireland adopting the language that comes directly from those online tornadoes and tumult about immigration, about climate denial, about vaccine doubters and so on, the global elites, all that sort of stuff. In fact, the Sunday Times of the weekend had a very interesting long feature on this slow fall of left-wing ideology. They were talking specifically about the vegan cause for climate change, vegan cafes, vegan products not doing well, the campaign on pronouns not working, not feeding into mainstream. And they're pointing to that era of corporate woke washing, is the way they put it, when the business is sort of use those radical progressive values in ads and marketing campaigns so blatantly that they manage to anger those who consider themselves, you know, right on social justice people, well-informed, political correct people, and those who were against all of that and everything it stood for. So watch out for this weekend for the reaction to that Harvey Weinstein earthquake and what it means for the direction of the conversation. Now, it's not that the new wave of feminism that came out of Me Too has died or anything. It's still alive and well in Italy, of all places, because of the movie called There's Still Tomorrow, which is a very nice idea, the idea, There's Still Tomorrow. And it is a movie in Italy. It's an Italian film. It's the most financially successful movie ever directed by a female filmmaker in Italy. The highest grossing movie of last year. And it beat Barbie and it also beat Oppenheimer, There's Still Tomorrow. And it's being released now this weekend across Europe, including in the UK and Ireland. There's Still Tomorrow. What's it about? Well, in the movie, Delia is a housewife and she's a mother living in poverty in post-war Rome in 1946, which is the year that Italian women first got to vote. Isn't that extraordinary? And it's set in 1946, but the themes are all about really today and they mirror the present day concerns over women's safety in Italian society. It's like they're having their movement a little bit later than everywhere else because it is still a deeply Catholic conservative country. According to recent police figures, 120 women were murdered in Italy in 2023, about one in every 3 days. The report said 50% were killed by partners or their ex-partners, but a quarter were killed by their own children. mostly, overwhelmingly, their sons. And the so-called crime of passion, which is murdering your spouse, was only criminalised in 1981 in Italy. So there's a huge conversation going on there. There's still tomorrow a big movement. So the progressive value is still going very well.
The famously progressive Italian Prime Minister is probably delighted her country is featured on the show. Anyway, that's the ugly stuff out of the way for now. Let's talk entertainment.
Now, if you're looking around for a film for this weekend to escape a lot of this, escape, but there's a bit of realism here as well, That They May Face the Rising Sun. It's an Irish film based on John McGahern's final novel about a couple's return to rural Ireland, has got rave reviews. As you'd imagine, across all the Irish reviewers, it's going to be a big, big movie. So I turn to get the more international view. Is it as good as we say in Ireland? The answer is yes. The Financial Times have given it a 5-star review this morning. A moving adaptation of John McGahern's final novel, Irish director Pat Collins' meditative film, measures life's disappointments against the enduring presence of nature. And Barry Ward and Anna Burdirk are the stars. Barry Ward is, I'd say, kind of a big breakthrough for him in many ways. Oh, he's been around for a long time. Jimmy's Hall, you will have seen him in Bad Sisters as well. So That They May Face the Rising Sun, it's set in the early 1980s in Ireland. It's about a couple living in the countryside. Some of the imagery is beautiful. There's hay being made and all that, and it's about the people they talk to, the landscape, the seasons passing. A nice, slow, calm film, and gestures. The end, That They May Face the Rising Sun, and it says, here's a film, this is the Financial Times, that unwraps its mystery slowly, revealing under its quiet surface the human condition, writ delicate but deep. 5 stars. And the British Film Institute also raving about this. They say the region of Ireland in the 1980s, one that still lives in the old ways. There are rumours of telephone poles being installed soon. But for now, the news is primarily shared after Sunday Mass or walking across the fields to visit your neighbours. Kids still going to school and all through fields and so on. So it's a lovely little meditative film, and it's getting massive, massive reviews.
It does sound good. But is Ryan Gosling in it? No, I don't think he is. But he is in
The Fall Guy, starring Ryan Gosling in a screwball action comedy film, basically. So it's also, by the way, apparently a sign of the backlash against Hollywood's over-reliance on CGI, because this is all live action, no kind of visual effects nonsense going on. So good old-fashioned practical film, practical movie making back in style. What is it? A sweat-drenched spectacle celebrating the harmonious union between heart-stopping stunt work and charismatic movie stars like Ryan Gosling, who is still high on Kennergy, embracing his uncanny ability to be both the coolest and the goofiest guy in the room. In fact, there's a whole feature on Ryan Gosling I've seen this morning, talking about his own feminist credentials. The wholehearted embrace of comedy and being one of the most memed actors on social media means that Gosling's auto-satirising alpha male is the white hot box office stardom of 2024. Well, he was the star of last year as well, now, to be fair.
Was he the star, though? I mean, was the movie called Ken? The prosecution rests. Back down to earth with a roundup of some sporting events coming up over the weekend.
League of Ireland stuff. Damien Duff's Shelburne, they're taking on St. Pat's at Tulke Park. That's the big Dublin derby tonight. Second place, Shamrock Rovers are against Galway United. Dundalk, Mon the Town. What are they doing? They're in Oriel Park at home. And they're taking on Bowes, so that's a good one. The Liverpool sufferers. The season might feel like it's over, but technically the fight continues. Liverpool away to West Ham tomorrow afternoon, 12:30. And Man City, who are ahead, game at hand and all that, are playing Notts Forest. Arsenal are away to Spurs in the angry London derby. They might do what Everton did. Of course, I'm really just collapse Arsenal's chances if the Spurs can do it. And in the GA, of course, the big matches in the Ulster Championship, the only championship that matters, Armagh playing Down, Donegal versus Tyrone. That'll be a grudge blanket defence, pure, pure melodeon, that'll be. And then Leinster, if anyone's still paying attention. Kildare against Louth, yeah, that on paper should be good. Dublin versus Offaly, yeah, good luck with that. And loads of ladies GAA. The pick of the fixtures this weekend is Kerry and Cork in the TG Cahir Munster Football Championship. So look, and also shout for the girls in green, by the way. The Women's Six Nations draws to a close. We're hosting Scotland in the final round of the matches. And of course, we could automatically qualify for the Rugby World Cup if we can finish third in the Six Nations, which could end well after a bad, bad start. And the European Championships continues bad for Kelly Harrington. She lost her fight, her first fight in 3 years, But hopefully that spurs her on to retain her crown in Paris at the Olympics, where it all matters. But good luck to Reese McLenachan. He is in the pommel horse final in the European Championships today. Good luck. That's great hopes for him. He was so close in the Olympics, but he was probably just a smidgen too young.
A smidgen, yes. That's what I thought. Yeah, that's probably the best place to bail from the Oliver Callan Morning Monologue for today. Intrepid Today with Claire Byrne reporter Brian O'Connell met with residents in Cork City a few months ago to hear their concerns about the quality of their water over the past 2 years, which has been discoloured and, they considered, too dirty to drink, shower in, or even wash clothes in. Brian caught up with some of them again to see what, if anything, has changed.
When I met Sonia Cashman in January, the water coming out of her tap was a rust colour some days it was a kind of a yellowish colour. She was having trouble washing clothes, she was having trouble, even the basics like making a cup of tea was problematic, and taking a shower, such was the poor water quality. Now since then, she says, very little has changed, and she sent me this update on her situation.
Our water situation is still as bad, because they're saying that it's bad pipes, dirty pipes. But if it's dirty pipes all over the area, then why are some houses affected and not others? Everybody that I've spoken to, nobody has had their water tested. There is no change in the quality of the water. There is no change in anything really. And it's really just becoming a hazard at this stage. I think people are spending between 30 and 50 euros extra a week on water. We need more answers as to regard why could it happen in our house and not in other people's houses in the areas if we're all on the same dirty old rotten pipes. It's not adding up for a lot of us, and I'm just wondering, you know, would Irish Water like to comment on why it's happening in certain houses and areas and not other houses? I really want Irish Water to come back and say, you know, the exact issues are X, Y, and Z. I want them to say, here's bottles of free water. I want them to say, you know, we're actually know what we're doing. And that's really it, Brian. Thanks a million.
Sonia Cashman there, Brian. And politically, the issue has been getting attention too.
A lot of local representatives have been raising the issue. You can be sure it's going to be a hot topic as it comes up to the local elections, Claire. Taoiseach Micheál Martin accepted there is a significant problem with water supplies in parts of Cork City, and he said Uisgeir need to get it sorted and to give people a timeline. Now, Socialist Party TD Mick Barry, he held a public meeting recently on this. He's also been raising the issue, including this week in Leaders' Questions. He wants interim and long-term measures in place to deal with the problem. And when he spoke to me, clear, he began by referencing a survey he and his team are carrying out in parts of Cork City.
A clear majority of people, roughly two-thirds, are not trusting of their water supply, are buying bottled water because of the discoloration, and certainly in the cases of families, are spending 15 euro a week and more on that. So that's like 750 euro a year in a cost of living crisis.
One of the overall issues here as well, Mick, is the fact that we have this ageing piping infrastructure.
Uisgeir has said that it would cost 500 million euro in order to modernise it. I think it's becoming increasingly clear that's what needs to be done. But there also is a need for interim measures to relieve the financial burden on people and to guarantee clean water. And the ideas that have come up at community meetings include that there should be water tankers which tour affected areas and distribute water at distribution points, or that people should get water vouchers and they can exchange them for bottled water in the shops, or that people be supplied with a supply of filters. Uisgeir, as you say, have responded by saying that they're doing extensive flushing, but the reports that we have back, both from water workers and people in the affected communities, is that while the flushing does have an effect, that the effect is relatively short term and the problem begins to reemerge until to the point where oftentimes it's as bad as it was before. There are underlying pressures here, issues here that need to be addressed. Clearly, there would be a timeline on that. We need to be told what the timeline is And the finances and the plan need to be put in place to sort that.
That's Mick Barry, the Socialist Party TD. And mentioned there about the piping network in Cork. That's a major part of this, is it, Brian?
Quite a lot of old pipes in the network, Claire. As a result, there is this build-up of sediment over decades. The advice so far has been to let the tap run if it's discoloured, and only then is it safe to drink. But many residents, I suppose, aren't very happy with this. This week, though, Ishgairn began a very targeted flushing of parts of the city network. They began in Douglas on the south side. They've moved to Gronabrohar and Montanotti on the north side. Kind of gives you a sense of the scale of this problem. It's across both parts of the city. Now, I called Ishgairn's offices yesterday just to try and get some of those answers and a timeline for trying to fix this issue. I spoke with Brian O'Leary, who's Regional Operations Manager, and he began by talking about that infrastructure in Cork City.
In the Cork City network, we have approximately 600 kilometres of water main, and about half of that is old cast iron main dating back up to 100 years old. For Cork City, where we have, you know, an increase of discoloration reports, I suppose we're coming off the back of a number of years of huge investment into the water supply around the city, new treatment plant, new pumping stations. And what all of that can do is it can destabilise a network which is up to 100 years old in a lot of places. And so any, you know, linings and sediments and things that have built up over that, all those decades, essentially become loosened. And I suppose that's what we're seeing now, really, is the effects of that.
So if that's the case, I mean, the only thing that will really remedy this long term is to upgrade the piping network.
Long term, I mean, that is the long term solution. But what you're talking there is several investment cycles, you know, over several decades, really, to replace the amount of pipework that needs to be replaced in Cork City. Because if you had unlimited funding, which we don't, you can't shut down the whole of Cork City and close down all the streets to do this. It has to be done in a very coordinated fashion. We really do encourage people to, when they experience discoloured water, is to ring it into our contact centre.
We know Antonista Micheál Martin is looking for a timeline from you. He's looking for a plan, essentially. What are you going to do about it?
We've set up a dedicated task force of experienced people across all disciplines to look at the discoloration issue in Cork City. The latest piece, really, that we are beginning to see dividends on is we're running a really enhanced, concentrated flushing program.
What about providing bottled water and maybe perhaps water vouchers, or some people are suggesting, to some of the affected areas?
We share all our information with the Health Service Executive and the EPA as well, the Environmental Protection Agency. And to date, there's no restriction on the Cork City supply. So, you know, there isn't a do not consume or a boil water notice on the supply at the moment.
But sure, if the water is coming out rust coloured, you're not going to drink it.
You're not going to do it, but
you're not going to wash your clothes with it.
Correct, but our health advice is very clear that run the water until it runs clear, and then it is safe to drink. And the, all the experience we're getting from people out there is this is sporadic, but I suppose we're serving 125,000 people off this supply. It can last for a period of time, and then it clears, and it may come back, which isn't acceptable.
Brian O'Leary, Regional Operations Manager for Ishgairn there, ending Brian O'Connell's report for Today with Claire Byrne this morning on water discoloration issues in Cork City. The success of the show Baby Reindeer on Netflix grabbed the attention of Liveline listeners this afternoon. The show, which is based on a true story, is about a comedian and the person that stalks him. Katie Hannon, sitting in for Joe Duffy, spoke to Eve McDowell, whose own experience of stalking led to anti-stalking legislation being introduced in Ireland.
I had my own story back in between, I suppose, 2018 to 2019. I'd say most people have heard it by now, but just for anyone who hasn't, I was stalked by someone I didn't really know too well. He was an acquaintance when I was in college. And then I left college and he continued showing up to my workplace and outside my house. And I kept escalating until he shaved off his hair, eyebrows and his beard. And tried to break into my house the first time, and then he was successful on his second attempt at breaking in, and he attacked my housemate at the time with a hammer and a knife.
And just to say, and I know we won't dwell too much on, as you say, you have told the story in many formats and in many forums now, but just for people who still don't really quite understand the impact of having somebody just turning up when you know, leave your home or leave your work, or you see them, you know, that sense of being followed or being watched. Like, it was really, the detail of it was really quite extraordinary. Like, there was some days where he was following you for like the full, like from 9:30 in the morning until that night, every time you'd look up.
Yeah. It's so extreme, it never leaves you. And I should have, I suppose, gave a content warning to anyone listening before I went into that, because I know at the moment it's National Stalking Awareness Week. So it's good that Baby Reindeer has coincided with this week to kind of highlight some of those impacts that it has on people, because we did a study with UCC and we found that, you know, a lot of people experience anxiety and there's high rates of PTSD with it as well. And no matter whether it's in person or online, it really does affect every element of your life. Socially, you know, you're not going to be as social, psychologically and financially as well, because, you know, most people end up having to either seek legal help or seek counselling or therapy, or else miss out on work and things like that. So it really does.
And even in your case, I know you had to, you know, fork out for extra security, for cameras, for, you know, all sorts of, the implications go on and on. And that's a very interesting point as well, that so stalking has probably been around forever, but social media has meant that now you can stalk somebody from your, if you want to be a stalker, you don't even have to leave your house. You can actually stalk somebody online in a very frightening way.
Yeah, that's it. And a lot of people might not even know sometimes. So I think with COVID, there seems to be a rise in that. And the online can often lead to in-person, or in-person can lead to online as well. They go hand in hand together. But yeah, it's very accessible for people to reach information about people that they want to know more about, unfortunately. So it's just important to be cautious on what you're putting
information
up.
You put up. Exactly, yeah. And the other myth I think that's out there is that you get stalked by people that you've been in some kind of a serious relationship with, an ex-partner or somebody, a family member, somebody who knows you well. But as your case shows, you don't have to have had any kind of a relationship really with somebody for this stalking to take off.
Yeah, well, like, originally people always thought that it was just celebrities that got stalked or it was a stranger in the bushes, but over 50% of cases are post-relationship breakup. I recently did a workshop with Women's Aid 24-hour helpline staff, so they're now trained to respond to cases of stalking as well. If anyone needs that helpline, I think it's 0800 341 900, because the majority of the time it is post-relationship breakdown, but it does happen to other people as well, as myself and Una experienced, and in Baby Reindeer as well. So I think it's good to highlight both sides of that, but yeah, it is important to know it does link with coercive control a lot, majority of the time.
Yeah, because of course all of that is about control, you know.
Yeah, it is. It really is, yeah. Yeah, lack of consent and boundaries and control is really what feeds it.
And do you want to put out that number again? It's important. And of course, we have helplines, and we'll just check that we have appropriate helplines up on rte.ie that people can go to after this programme. But just that number might be helpful to give out, because people, as you say, might be in a situation now where they need help.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's 1-800-341-900. And it's important to know. And local rape crisis centres are there as well. I didn't realise at the time, because there's no stalking specific services, that doesn't mean that there's other services that are out there that aren't willing to help. They are willing to listen. So don't hesitate on reporting to them or reporting to the guards, because it is important that we understand how big the scale of the problem is. Because before this law was introduced in November, there was no data on how many stalking cases there was in the country, because they were being prosecuted under harassment. So it's really important that people report their cases in case they escalate further, or just, you know, capture how common this really is.
Yeah, and just to say again, the Women's Aid number, another number that would be useful to have handy, is 1-800-341-900. And again, just to remind people, rte.ie/helplines, you'll get an array of helplines there if there is something that you need help with right now. So that's important to say. But getting back to, like, we came into this because of the Baby Reindeer story, which is, I suppose, because it's just so well made and well dramatised and have brilliant actors in it, has really, really kind of taken fire in terms of capturing people's imagination and outlining what it might be like to get inside the head of both the stalker and the person being stalked. Have you actually been able to watch it? Because I wonder if people like yourself who've been through this, it must be quite triggering.
Well, I have to commend the man who scripted it after experiencing that, because Una and I would have taken part in a documentary with Virgin Media that was filmed over the space of 2 years, and it was really, really emotionally testing to have to revise everything and, you know, on camera as well. So I don't know how he did it. No, I haven't watched it yet. I have people close to me watching it, kind of telling me little bits about it. And there's some people that say, oh, you might be able to watch it. And then one of the girls in the office there today, she said, just don't do it to yourself, because anyone that I've spoken to that's watched it has been really impacted by it themselves. And I think it's really important that we're getting the male perspective, because I think male stalking cases are severely underreported as well. Just even from myself getting disclosures, there's a lot of men that I would kind of know that have reached out to me in the last 2 years, who, you know, might find it hard to speak up for themselves if they're experiencing it as well. So I'm hoping that this...
Yeah. Is there an element that men are too would be a little embarrassed maybe to say that this is something they couldn't handle themselves?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think there's I think on paper or in studies, you'll find that it is a gender-based violence. Like, it is majority of male perpetrators, and often with men, it can be men perpetrating it as well. But there are men that get stalked by women, and it's important that they're able to seek support as well, so that we can really kind of understand stalking. I suppose it's so under-researched and it's so common. I know the stat in the UK is 1 in 5 women will be stalked in their lifetime and 1 in 10 men. And then in the US, there's figures like 1 in 5 women and 1 in 7 men.
Extraordinary figures. That's Eve McDowell talking to Katie Hannon on this afternoon's Liveline about the problem of stalking, highlighted by Netflix's hit series Baby Reindeer. The visiting critic slot on Oliver Callan continued its journey this morning when theatre and filmmaker Paul Mercier was sent clubbing in Galway. Paul's new film, Prospect House, opens in cinemas tonight. But what did the middle-aged writer make of the clubbing scene in the West?
Were you aware that Galway had lost all its nightclubs? Surely you were, because you're a man.
I was aware of that, but I felt that Galway had lost a lot of things. Yeah. You know, I mean, Galway off-season... Now, this is just an opinion, Oliver, but sometimes Galway off-season, there's very little for young people at night,
for sure.
Except the pub, and I don't think that's a great idea. And then, so, the idea of going to a club, or going to two clubs, which we went to, is great to see what the action... And it was an eye-opener, absolute eye-opener. And so, off-season, I'm saying, in Galway is... You know, just for young people in the region.
Yeah, it's huge. Because we're left with zero nightclubs, but Electric Nights have returned. They came back in January, which is a proper dance music scene in Galway. I don't know what building that's in. You'll tell us in a second. But Cuba is one people might know because it was...
Yeah, but that was only coming back as well. They
only reopened in March.
They were out of action as well.
Yeah. So Cuba's back. It was an institution, but it is back now after being closed for 13 years.
Yeah, just good.
So it was a huge thing. On Prospect Hill, just off...
Now, there's the irony. Not only that, we parked the car literally beside a building called Prospect House.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah, and it's right beside the booking place, and it's just literally across the road from it. I mean, it's quite ironic. And so we went into the Cuba Club, but we were a bit early because there was a twerking workshop on.
In the nightclub?
Yeah.
This is all happening in Galway.
Yeah, about 3 rows of women doing twerking, right? Serious nice. Twerking. So we kind of felt, oh, hold on, now we're in the wrong place here. But we decided we'd stay.
How does a playwright describe twerking for people who don't know?
Okay, I'm going to give this a go, right? It is the gyrating of the hips, the pelvis and the posterior in a clubbing club
God,
dancing.
That's amazing.
A high concentration on that, very physical. Now, we felt like, OK, are they going to think, because there we were, like the two of us sitting at the back watching this. And there we were, and we were wondering, do they think we're parents in checking on the daughter? Or do they think we're being prudish or voyeuristic? Or worse still, do they think we're celebrities in? So we decided we'd get out. We said, no, we'll come back.
We'll come back to Cuba. Okay.
Went and we got an energy drink. And then we went back to Cuba again. And
all right,
the club was beginning to start up.
What time is it starting up at?
Oh, it's around 11, half 11.
Oh, perfect timing.
And then I got a warning sign, you better get down to the electric because the queue is beginning to start in the electric. So we walked down to the electric and that place was just, the queue was out the door there, right? And it was absolutely hopping. So we skipped the queue, brought around there and fantastic, absolutely fantastic. And to see, it was just hopping. You know, it's great.
I mean, there's the DJ Paul Belton. They have different floors in electric. Just
they
to give
did, yeah. Because now I have to admit, we didn't go dancing because we felt very. We felt it was just a bit awkward, you know.
Yeah, you're just
Well, look, I mean, you're standing there, and in fact, this couple came up to me. My wife Anne disappeared. I was standing there with two energy drinks in my hand, looking around, looking like a spare. And this couple comes up, a young man, and he starts rubbing my grey hair. And then he kissed me on the forehead, and the two of them just stared at me as if to say, listen, your time is up, boy. Good luck to you.
And this was some kind of ritual to send you on your way?
Well, I think they felt sorry for me. So the only thing I could do was just pretend that I was one of the security and then just walking around. So when I came back, I lost her for a while. When I came back, we said, look, no, we better sit down. We're looking really stupid. So we sat down, and then we started, you know, I mean, we were dying to get on the floor. And you were saying earlier about clubbing for older people.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, we would clear the floor if we got on the floor. But we would look like the wedding, you know, the couple on the wedding on the wedding floor.
Yeah, but isn't it one of few places where all the generations dance together is at a wedding and it works perfectly
fine. Well, there, but on this night,
what age are they?
I was the oldest person in the building. I'm older than the staff. I'm older than the security up front. I'm older. I mean, you know what I mean. And
thankfully, it was Galway, so we weren't older than the building.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I was as old as the music because you know what music came out? ABBA came on, right? Gimme, gimme, gimme. And I thought it meant, I started singing and I said, gimme, 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 I'm mad after midnight. But it's actually gimme, 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 a man after midnight.
That's allowed too nowadays. They're young.
They're all singing it. And I says, sure, this song came out when we were rejecting that kind of music. We were going punk.
That's uncool. ABBA was uncool.
But they're all singing it. They're all singing it. Yeah. And this song came out before anybody was born.
So they're late teens, early 20s, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Right. They're fantastic.
Because they would think people in their 30s are old. Do you know what I mean?
Well, they thought we were old.
Yeah, for sure.
That's for sure.
But what's the atmosphere like? Is it busy?
It's very busy. And they do a good... Listen, they put on a good show.
Yeah.
A really, really good show. And they manage it very well. The staff work really hard. They have different... It's like Electric Picnic crammed into a building. You know, different areas doing different things.
And serious DJs are playing the music.
Serious DJs in different parts of the building.
Paul Belton, Your Lag was in the garden. Natalie Roach was in the factory bit of the electric in Galway. So.
All different types of things. And then eventually, look, we said, look, we better go back to the Cuba because they had only started, you know. So we went back to the Cuba to see and their queue was out the door as well. And they were going in and they were. But that's all more alternative clubbing. Do you know what I mean? I don't think they'll do ABBA. Maybe they do.
Is it more serious techno?
It's more alternative techno.
We have some of the Irish stuff here. By the way, there's a bit of excitement in the queues, isn't there? I think you noted.
The youngsters,
they love queuing. That's kind of the anticipation is half the night, isn't it?
Well, there is that, but there's also the reality, the fact that when we were leaving the building, they can't let any more people in because they're full.
Of course.
So that was happening at the electric. So the fact that we left, that allowed two people to go in.
I see what you mean, yes.
I mean, serious queuing. Yeah. I mean, but it's great to see. And I asked the staff, look, I mean, where are these kids coming from? I shouldn't say kids, but anyway. Where are these young people coming from? I said, they're local, a lot of local people, and from different cultural backgrounds, so many different cultural backgrounds and social backgrounds too. It's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a much greater mix than maybe in some of our days. Back in the day.
Completely, Oliver. Absolutely, yeah.
Which adds a bit of crack to the mix. So you didn't dance?
No, but we got the pulse. We got I'd love to go. I'd love to dance. We were Anne. If there was anybody who would have danced all night, would have been Anne.
I really felt.
But look, it was. You just feel.
We need to be among our own kind of tribes in a way, don't we?
Well, we would go back with a group of people.
Yeah. Okay. Yes.
Right.
If you had how many would you need?
Okay, just maybe two couples.
Would four be? I think you need
that'll
more.
That'll do.
I think you need about 10, to be honest. You need to have a section of the dance floor before it suddenly becomes acceptable. It's like, oh, it's okay. It's the elderly people are dancing, ironically.
Well, maybe if they just had a little section for the likes of us. But look, great night.
And a great insight into youth culture 2024.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as long as people are just looking after one another and enjoying themselves and great energy, great colour, great.
That's theatre and filmmaker Paul Mercier talking about clubbing in Galway for Oliver Callan's Visiting Critics slot this morning. Paul's new film Prospect House opens in limited release in cinemas tonight. Good news, everyone. There's been a huge increase in anchovy numbers off the south coast of late, so you don't have to go to the European mainland for good teeny tiny fishies. Okay, it's not really good news because the anchovies are here due to the adverse effects of climate change. On This Morning's Today with Claire Byrne, wildlife filmmaker Ken O'Sullivan spoke about the whys and wherefores of species like anchovies being affected by warming waters.
What is going on here with these tiny little fish deciding to come and live off the Irish coast?
Well, I mean, look, due to climate change, we have warming seas, which I don't know if you're a sea swimmer yourself, Claire, or no, but it sounds lovely. I'm in the water most days myself, but not necessarily so. We've seen dramatic increases in marine heat waves that were described as last summer, in particular off the west coast of Ireland. And, you know, I think over the previous 120 years, oceans across the world warmed by about 1.5 degrees. And in Ireland, in about the last 60 years, broadly speaking, we've had almost a 1 degree change. Now, that doesn't sound much, you know, if you're out in the air, what's 1 degree? But in the ocean, it's huge, huge difference. And it affects all of the life that lives there that has evolved over millions of years. So what's happening is that, broadly speaking, we're seeing a northward migration of several fish species. And the reason for that is because warmer water holds less oxygen. So warming seas, we start to see a deoxygenation. And fish breathe, if you like, by swimming. So as they swim, they pass seawater across their gills and through a process of diffusion, extract oxygen. Now, if there's less oxygen in the water, that's going to stress the animal, that's going to impact its metabolism, it's going to impact its ability to grow. So it's a problem. And what we're seeing is, again, species like salmon and even mackerel are very complex. There's a lot of factors at play, but there has been a northward migration of both of those. So now we're seeing, we filmed anchovies in 2016 in Dingle Bay, Clare, and, you know, I was kind of scratching my head, what are these animals? But we're starting to see big numbers. We had a huge shoal off west of Kerry last summer of anchovies, and I'm hearing about fishermen catching sardines. So it's a direct response to warming waters, which is response to climate change.
So everything then is moving up. That's what's going on.
Well, I mean, not everything. There are hundreds of thousands of species, but lots of things are moving up. And, you know, back in the 90s, we saw triggerfish coming into Irish waters. You know, these are much warmer water species. We've had Portuguese man-o-war jellyfish that have come up. I think the first record was 6 or 7 years ago. Scientists called them Lusitanian species. Lusitania was the name the Romans gave to the Iberian Peninsula of Portugal and Western Spain. But the warmer water species are starting to come into our waters.
Mm-hmm. And in general terms then, the marine heat wave we heard about last year in Ireland, I mean, what is the impact of that? I know scientists are very worried about it.
Well, I mean, these things, it'll take a lot of work to study the causes, the root causes of this and the impact. But broadly speaking, it's down to climate change. And, you know, we had, depending on whose study you look at, temperatures above normal last July and August between 3.5 and 5 degrees to the west of Ireland, west of Kerry, west of Donegal. So, you know, there are a lot of factors at play, but it has a significant impact. So if we think about El Nino, people are familiar with that, which impacts weather all over the world. That's a warming. That's caused by a warming of seawater in the mid and eastern Pacific Ocean. And as the seawater warms, obviously that creates precipitation, which can add to storms and to hurricanes. And think about the impact that the sea has on us. For example, North Donegal and County Derry are almost at the same latitude as Moscow. Mm-hmm. Now, there's a very, very different climate. If you think back to your geography in school, you know, it's a continental climate. They're very far from the sea, very warm summers, very, very cold winters, whereas Donegal, obviously, and Derry and all of Ireland, we have the ocean and it moderates our climate. And then, of course, we have the Gulf Stream. So any kind of significant changes in these can have a very significant impact.
So coming back then to the anchovies and the sardines that you've heard have been spotted around the place as well. I mean, there are some who would say that this could be an opportunity for the Irish fishermen with these new fish in the water. I know they're talking about this in the UK as well. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, I think potentially there's it could be exploited by Irish fishermen and by Irish people, and it could be an opportunity because, you know, billions of people are fed from the sea across the world every day. But So the way fisheries are managed in Ireland and across the Western world is that, you know, if scientists go out, and we've got world-class scientists in the Marine Institute and platforms, our latest state research vessel, Tom Crean, these guys will go out over the course of years and survey a particular fish stocks. And through an enormously complex process, they arrive at a number. And that number is called maximum sustainable yield. And that means how much of that species we can catch every year without depleting the stock. So great if there's anchovies and sardines coming into our waters potentially, but there must be, that kind of work has to be done. And I understand it's already underway, and you arrive at a figure then and where you can do a management plan. And remember, a well-managed species of fish would be much more resilient to climate change. But I'd caution about, you know, Claire, in human nature, it's easy to say, oh God, my neighbour is doing this and I have to keep up. And I hear that in fisheries, you know, Murphy down the road's put out 500 pots. If I don't get out fast, like, he'll have it cleaned out. You know, people are talking about Cornwall. We have to have a management plan. And look, there's any number of examples of this, like the boarfish fishery, which came around in the early years of the millennium. It was unmanaged. And by 2010, they caught 144,000 tons and it immediately collapsed then thereafter. Mm-hmm. We have chronic industrial scale fishing of sprat in our waters, which the government had outlawed, but some fishermen took them to the High Court. They're trying to stop it again. So when somebody says millions and millions of fish, I find that a bit misleading because, you know, a ton of sprat, I think, is a million fish. Now, a ton of fish isn't really that much, but you're depleting the fish that feed on plankton that are then fed on by other fish, by seabirds who are in real trouble in our waters and across the Atlantic, by dolphins, by whales right up along the food chain.
And what is the impact on the whole ecosystem then if we have a new species introduced off our coast like the anchovies and the sardines? It must change things.
Well, it does. I mean, you know, as I said, you know, I mean, it changes the nature of the universe. You know, animals and flora and fauna are constantly evolving and adapting. But it's a very dramatic change. You're talking over the course of millions of years. So now we're seeing species that we might have had vagrants, you know, 50, 100 years ago, but we've seen large scale coming in. So it's to be understood yet. I mean, we can't really tell in the future what will be the impact. But, you know, we have to manage the fishery and to manage the exploitation of these animals. But many of our marine creatures, many of our sharks, of our megafauna, our whales, are in serious trouble.
Yeah, it's not great, is it? That's wildlife filmmaker Ken O'Sullivan talking to Claire Byrne this morning about the recent arrival of large numbers of anchovies off the south coast. Comedian Kevin McGarren dropped into the Ray D'Arcy Show on his way to his Liberty Hall gig tonight, and he opined on, among other things, the deep connection between Kerry and Star Wars.
You're on your way to Liberty Hall. What are you doing here? No, yes, it's your circuitous route. So you've a gig tonight and that finishes up the tour, does it?
Yeah, pretty much. There's a few more dates added to it. But yeah, Liberty Hall is the biggest one, I suppose.
Right.
But I have a few more to go, Cavan and place. I haven't done Kerry yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I Why not?
I just haven't got around to it. I want to do one on Skellig Meikle. I like the idea. You know what the film Star Wars?
Yes, I do, yeah.
Because they've really embraced, I was in Dingle, they've really embraced the whole Star Wars
T-shirts.
Thing. T-shirts, yeah. Photo opportunities, yeah. Everything. Yeah. And I suppose Star Wars is a very Kerry story, you know.
Comedy.
The story of a young farm boy who doesn't get on with his outlad, kissed his sister a couple of times. and the Chewbacca accent, of course, is based on the Kerry accent.
Is it?
You know. Like there's huge similarities between Kerry and Chewbacca.
Yeah. I can't imagine that they'd allow you to do a comedy gig on.
I probably couldn't afford the insurance.
No. Yeah, public indemnity and all that sort of thing. Yeah. So on a day like today, where you're heading into a gig and it's a big one, what happens with the nerves? Or are there nerves now? Are you too used to it?
I get nervous in my stomach. It's all intestinal.
Right.
So I'm happy to do something like this because it keeps my mind off it,
uh-huh.
And I'm not sitting at home wondering about it. So I like keeping busy. I think that's the key.
I was saying to the two lads that, you know, nerves and excitement,
yes,
they affect the body in the same way. So the scientists tell us.
I don't know. I've been excited and it feels better than this.
Right, okay. But some people say if you just change the label, you know, so if you just change it from nerves to I'm excited about it.
Yeah, yeah.
But would you be a bit excited, would you, about it?
Oh, no, I am excited, yeah. Definitely. Yeah, because you want it to go well, I suppose. Mm.
Mm.
But if you're on a first date and things were going well, you wouldn't be saying, you're nervous towards the end of the date. You want to pretend you're excited.
Yes, yes. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. You're originally from Cavan.
I am indeed.
Whereabouts in Cavan?
A little place called Gowna. Loch Gowna.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
A girl I went to college with married a man from Gowna.
No way.
Yeah.
I probably know him. There's only about 16 people there.
Right. They're living in America now.
No way.
He was, I think he was a carpenter. She used to come back on a Monday and tell us her about her exploits.
It's a funny place. We've held on to, last time I was here, I was talking about clue dogs with Catherine. Clue dogs are clue dogs.
Right.
It's an Easter tradition where you boil eggs outside.
Okay.
And you all eat eggs outside. I want to come back here before Easter next year.
Uh-huh.
And I want to encourage everybody to bring back the clue dog. Will you join me in that campaign?
I don't know. What does it involve?
Jesus Christ. Ray, you have to light a little fire outside your house.
Yeah, come on.
And boil eggs on it. That's it.
Right.
I'm not asking you to run a marathon. You'd probably do that quicker.
Yeah, I probably
would. You fitness freak.
I probably would. But
what do I have to do?
But isn't that funny, though? Because back in the day, I would have gone, yeah. And
yeah,
then
yeah.
Off air, you know, forget about that. He'll never come back to me on it. Now I've got to a stage in my life where I just am just bluntly honest.
You're like Larry David.
No, that comparison has been mentioned before. So, Cavan, and now you're living in Dublin.
I'm living in Dublin.
They don't do the clue dogs, I'd say, where you live.
No,
in Dublin.
I think you'd be arrested. I found out I actually live in a fancy area now. I always lived in kind of rough enough areas in Dublin. Now I live in a fancy area because there was a market down the road. So I decided I'm going to check out this market. And like the kind of markets you'd be used to going to in Cavan would sell like jump leads,
right,
or, you know, counterfeit DVDs or stolen machinery. But this was fancy Southside Dublin market. They were selling stuff like crepes so thin you weren't sure if you bought anything at all. Fancy soaps made out of like blueberries and gravel that you'd buy for visitors. But if a visitor ever used it, you'd disown them. You'd never speak to them again. But I saw there was a lad selling biscuits. Like biscotti biscuits, you know, the little fat biscuits.
Yes.
Italian, they look like fat Eucharists.
Yes, yeah.
And there were 5 biscuits for a fiver, Ray. And I was like, that's very expensive, even for South Dublin. But I'm going to treat myself. So I bought the biscuits. I'm walking away from my man, slapped down the fiver. I look at the package and I realise I have bought dog biscuits. I don't own a dog, Ray. These are biscuits for a dog, by an Italian fancy dog, apparently. Ray, in order to spend that amount of money on a dog, I'd want to be seeing him romantically. And it would need to be early enough in the relationship where I'm really, you know, trying to impress the dog.
Yeah. You'll find now that we, I think, as a nation, are developing relations with our dogs akin to America. I remember being in America.
They're replacing children.
People
are probably neglecting their children to buy fancy biscotti biscuits for a... Who buys biscotti biscuits for a dog,
well,
Ray?
Well, probably my wife.
I ate every one of them. I ate every single one of them. And they were lovely.
You know, in our house, you know, it's constant. You hear this, oh, you're so handsome. Look at you, you're so handsome.
And it's not directed towards you.
It's the dog.
You're lovely. Your lovely floppy ears. No, I am talking to you now, Ray. Go outside if you're going to do that. Get off me leg, Ray.
Yeah.
That's learned behaviour, Ray.
Speaking of dogs, so you do, and just less than 5 minutes ago, we heard your voice there on the radio before we started talking to you. So you're in demand when it comes to voiceover work.
Yeah, I think there's a big desire for sort of flat. You kind of have an accent where you're not sure where you're from.
Is that it?
I think they want an accent that it's not too posh for Dublin. It's not, you know, uh-huh, it's not too Cavan.
Yes,
yes. It's somewhere in the Midlands. So I think that's why I get a lot of work. But I remember I was doing an ad once for a food ordering company, you know, these apps. And I'm reading the ad. And we'll say it's for food order app.
Yeah.
Literally couldn't think of a name on the fly. But the script was, there's a man...
Just you, man, just do, just do, just do,
just do.
Yeah, right, okay.
Man and woman sitting at a couch with a little dog. And the man orders food. The food arrives, the dog barks.
Right.
And then they go, and I say, just do, the best way to get food in your house.
Right.
And on the script, like it said my dialogue, and then it said, dog, woof. Right. And I said to the guys, I was like, surely, you know, you don't want me. You're going to use a sound effect for that. You're not going to, I don't have to do the woof. And I could hear them whispering. They're like, I don't know, what do you think? Should we need, yeah, we have them here. Don't we? Maybe you just, don't. Kevin, do you know what? Yeah, we'll just get you to do the woof. I was like, there's no way I want my friends going, geez, McGarren's woofing on the radio. So I gave a performance of a dog that was Oscar winning. Right. I went like this. I went, and they used my woof in the ad. My woof is in this ad. They didn't pay a dog. I saved
them. Did you get extra for the woof?
I didn't get extra for the woof.
That's rough.
And then I was doing a job like a year later with the same sound engineer. And I was like, here, remember you made me do that woof?
Yeah.
And he goes, that was a very good woof. We actually saved that. Anytime we have a dog. So anytime you hear a dog on the radio, it's probably me.
Kevin McGarren confessing to taking work from thousands of Irish dog actors on this afternoon's Ray Darcy Show. Finally, on this edition of Playback Daily, back to dancing for non-youngsters. Having sent filmmaker Paul Mercier to a nightclub in Galway where he didn't actually dance, Oliver Callan spoke to Stuart Dunwoody about the club he co-promotes and where he does dance, the 30 Plus Club.
What exactly is the 30 Plus Club? We're uninitiated down here in Dublin. Tell us what it is.
It's basically daytime clubbing for the over 30s. It is kicking off in the Academy in Dublin Saturday 22nd of June from 5 to 9 p.m.
Oh, so lovely
hours. Early evening clubbing for anybody over the age of 30.
And that's on Middle Abbey Street. The Academy is the venue there.
That's so, correct.
And
yes.
The idea, why did you land on those particular times? Obviously, you've learned from your previous clients.
Just with my age and stuff, and friends asking, when are you going to put some stuff on for us? So yeah. It's sort of ideal, you know what I mean? You're out, you're finished at 9, you're grabbing a bit of food, you're on your last train or bus home, and then you're sort of up fresh on a Sunday morning. So that was the whole concept behind it. When we've done a wee bit of research of sort of people wanting to get out early and home early. So That's where the time frame come up from 5 till 9. So, yeah, it's taken Belfast by storm. Sold over 10,000 tickets to date. All dates of Belfast are sold out till Christmas. And the only natural thing then was to bring it to Dublin. And the Academy, for being the venue it is, was the perfect choice.
And you said for people your age, what age are you?
I'm 44.
44, okay.
I'm 44, yeah.
And the 10,000 tickets in Belfast, that's multiple nights, isn't it? Because you don't pack
them
in too much.
That's over the space of 9 nights, yeah. So right up to Christmas, fully booked. And going by pre-sales yesterday in Dublin, we sold out in record time.
You've sold out the 22nd of June, the Academy, it's gone?
The pre-sale, yeah. Yeah, we've limited general admission on sale at 10 a.m. this morning.
Uh-huh.
And last evening, we added two extra dates. So we added the 20th of July and the 24th of August. And pre-sale for those are selling well. And then all three dates, last remaining general admission, will be on sale today from 10 a.m. So great response so far in the capital.
And when in the Belfast club nights, what was the average age roughly of the crowd that showed up?
It's a real mixed bag, you know what I mean? When doors first opened, I would say sort of mid to late 40s were coming in, and then the sort of 30 to 40 range, they were sort of leaving it a wee bit later and coming in right about 6 p.m. So
interesting,
real mixed bag, which was great. But obviously the music policy addresses that for, so like in the Academy room one, we have a bit of pop R&B dance hits from the 90s and noughties. And then room two was sort of brought in a wee bit of a retro feel, 70s and 80s classics, and then you're rocking in the anthem. So we're covering a wide range of musical choice, sir.
Fantastic. So you have different rooms, different tunes, and the crowd goes with it.
Yeah, just giving a different feel to it. Yeah, so as I say, it's sort of catering for everybody.
And how strict are you to ensure that that everyone is over 30 at the door?
Yeah, you have to be over 30.
I'm asking for a
security. If security asks you for some ID, I think some people will take it as a compliment.
Yes.
Yeah, we're going to be very strict on that.
And Paul, finally, people over 30.
I was going to ask that, Oliver, actually. Yeah.
Paul Mercy has been clubbing for us in Galway, Stuart.
How did he find it?
Oh, brilliant.
He's looking for a place like this to go, aren't you? Where the older crowd to go.
Yeah, I hope I'm not too old for it now, Stuart.
No, Paul, just come up and see me in the door and I'll get you sorted on the evening.
Thank you.
No VIP treatments allowed.
Thanks, Stuart.
No, just RTE. Yeah.
Okay.
But I'd say people would be thrilled to be ID'd again, so you're giving them a thrill of youth and everything.
I think it needs to stick to that. You know what I mean? The concept is daytime clubbing for the over 30s, so we are going to be very, very strict on that.
Camille, what if someone is under 30? Like, you can't really tell them no, can you?
Oh, we can, yeah.
You can?
We can. It's sort of, I think you can, yeah. It's sort of, it says it on the artwork, it says it on your ticket site when you're buying a ticket, you know what I mean? It's sort of,
it's not a problem.
You don't want to go any lower than 30
anyway.
Because it's the concept of the night, and I think it'll stay like that for when it's running. So yeah, we will be very strict on the door.
Show your free travel pass.
People might be stealing their.
Some people actually were saying to me, "Will an extra vision card work for them?" So possibly.
Oh no,
might,
that's
you know
it,
what I mean.
Yes, it definitely shows the age.
Someone might actually steal their mum's passport in a reversal.
Potentially, yeah, or have an older sister that they look like. They might try to use that ID. You never know. It's probably happened before, and it'll happen again.
But Stuart, anyway, to give everybody confidence, they dance just as well as anybody else, don't they?
They do, and we're also giving them. People who maybe haven't been in a nightclub experience 10, 20 years, Paul might have found that out, you know what I mean? It's moved along so much with CO2, confetti, so much more production's brought in, you know what I mean? So people, I think, will be surprised as what we're offering on the night, because if you danced 20 years ago, I think you'd be lucky we just got a couple of lights and sound system. We're now at sort of the dynamics of clubbing's a totally different beast. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to people's reactions coming into the Academy on Saturday 22nd of June.
Do loads of people come in with earplugs?
Not really, but I think
ears,
most venues now supply them.
They do,
So obviously they'll be available. But I think if you're signing up to an over 30s club and event, I think you know what's coming your way, you know what I mean? But I think the concept in this, and we've covered every basis, from the reaction the first night in Belfast, we got a great reception, and I can't see why it can't happen in the Academy in June.
People will love the idea that you don't fill it to capacity.
Yeah, well, that's the best thing. I think sort of anybody sort of I'll reference it to my age, and you sort of want to move freely through the venue. Sort of if you're going to bar to get bar X, if you're going to toilet facilities, yeah. So that's been brought in as well. Capacity's been reduced to sort of accommodate that, and I think it's best because one, people coming in having a great night, but having a great night with music and the overall experience. Has to come across. So yeah, that's what one of the points we brought in.
Very good. So you have Belfast, and there's a night in Newry as well, isn't there? In May.
May. We're going to just beside the border in Newry. Yep. It's great. Newry's a great city. The bank bar and bistro is a great venue. Just wanted to sort of test it out on a smaller venue. But no, it's sales on it are going great as well. So overall, Very positive.
You've done about it's going to Dublin. Are you going to roll it out to the rest of the country? What's the plan?
Potentially, yeah. A lot of people getting in contact with us at the minute. But as I say, Belfast and Dublin, let's just sort of concentrate on those and then sort of see. The venue has to be right and stuff like that there for us. But as I say, there's no point trying to take it to many places as of yet, because it's still a new concept, and obviously you just fine tweak stuff on the night. But we seem like it's working well at the minute. It's working fine, and as I say, excited to bring it to Dublin.
Daytime clubbing for the over 30s and their Zimmer frames, presumably. That's Stuart Dunwoody talking to Oliver Callan about the 30 Plus Club, which began in Belfast and is coming to Dublin soon. And that's all I have for you on this edition of Playback Daily. The programme was compiled, written and edited by me, Neil O'Sheridan. Don't forget you can listen back to all the programmes featured on Playback Daily on the RTE radio app. I'll be back with another dose of catch-uppery on Monday. Until then, thank you for listening and good luck.